The Duke and the Preacher's Daughter by Barbara Cartland and read by Sarah Lambie for Saga Egmont. Chapter 1. 1817. Footmen with powdered wigs and gold-braided livery extinguished the candles around the big dining room, leaving alight only those in the golden candelabra on the dining table. The six candles created an oasis of light, which was reflected not only on the magnificent ornaments, but on the table itself. This, in the fashion set by the Prince Regent, had no cloth, but was polished to reflect like a mirror everything upon it. The butler put a decanter of port and one of brandy, standing in their ornate coasters, on the table, and after a glance round the room, withdrew, followed by the footman. The Duke of Kingswood leant back in his chair and said to the gentleman sitting beside him,
"You have been strangely quiet this evening, Bevil. Is there something on your mind?"
The gentleman he addressed hesitated a moment before he replied,
"You know me so well, Nolan, that I might have guessed you would suspect that I had something to tell you."
The Duke waited with a cynical expression on his face. It would have proclaimed to anybody watching him that he was quite sure nothing that he was told would surprise him, and it would be doubtful if it would even interest him. It was strange that a man who had such vast possessions, and could in fact command anything he desired, should look so blasé and so bored with life. It was not only his friends, and he had a great number, but also the lovely ladies who tried to capture and hold him in their wiles, who had found it almost impossible to keep the Duke's attention for long. His companion was very different. Major Bevil Haverington, who was in fact the same age as the Duke, looked younger, which was due perhaps to his enjoyment of the life he lived, and his simple, uncomplicated nature, which ensured he was pleased with almost everything. In a way, it was strange that the two men should be such close friends, but they had gone to Eton and Oxford together, then had served in the same regiment through the long, grueling years in the peninsula. It had been a campaign which could have made any man age quickly, and perhaps, as in the Duke's case, look at life thereafter with prejudiced eyes. Major Haverington had in fact enjoyed every battle, and as a regular soldier he had no intention of giving up his regiment now that there was peace. The Duke, on the other hand, although he had been one of the youngest commanders on the battlefield, had been forced on his father's death to buy himself out. He had returned home to administer his estates and take his place not only in the House of Lords, but in the county and at court. The Prince Regent had welcomed his homecoming with open arms, and so had a great number of other people in the beau monde, mainly for some selfish reason of their own. It was unusual for the Duke to be alone with only one friend at Kingswood, but he had decided after receiving unexpectedly a letter from his agent that his presence there was necessary, and had invited Bevil Haverington to drive down with him from London. Major Haverington had been only too glad to oblige. He preferred being alone with his friend, when they could talk over the battles they had fought side by side, and reminisce in a way they knew the majority of their friends found extremely boring. Ever since they had arrived in the magnificent house which had belonged to the Wood family since the time of Charles II, the Duke had sensed a reserve and a feeling of unrest about the Major that was unlike him. Now he knew he was about to hear the explanation, and he was quite certain that if it concerned himself it would be, if not unpleasant, certainly nothing that would add to his enjoyment of the evening. He took a sip of his port before he said,
"Come on, Bevil, out with it. If there is one thing I dislike, it is to anticipate the worst."
"It is not as bad as that," Major Haverington replied. "At the same time, you will not be pleased."
"That will be nothing new," the Duke added sardonically.
"It concerns Richard."
"I might have guessed that."
"He is making a fool of himself."
"That is certainly nothing unusual."
"This time it is rather more serious. He has asked Delith Maldon to marry him, and she has accepted."
It was obvious that the Duke was surprised from the way he stiffened, and his eyes were hard as he exclaimed,
"I always knew Richard was a fool, but not such a damned fool as to marry Delith Maldon."
"He is too good a catch for her to let him go," the Major said simply.
He fiddled with the stem of his glass as he went on.
"You know, ever since Gosport refused to marry her, she has been trying to find somebody of importance to take his place."
"Gosport's mother managed to save him at the very last moment," the Duke said. "She had almost got him to the church door."
There was silence as both men were thinking of the weak, good-humoured young Marquis of Gosport, who had cast himself in.